Okay, so I am recording this time. I apologize for not recording last time. Let me remind you to start off that next week we take a break, and the reason for that is just that I'll be traveling and have other commitments at the time that we would usually meet. So this coming 2 weeks will be a chance to review what we have been doing and actually, I think well, it's always a good idea to go back and integrate and find ways to connect what we've been discussing with your experience. You know, find ways to conduct the inquiry in your daily experience. That's the sort of thing that I've been emphasizing for a while now, and I'm going to continue to emphasize because I think that that's the way we really do something of value. We really make the transition to a new vision of reality. You know, that phrase, as you know, in the first book, that's the subtitle of the first book, Time, Space, and Knowledge, A New Vision of Reality. And in the last year or so, perhaps, I've been thinking about that quite a bit, and it seems to me really important. It's one of those phrases that sounds nice, and so you say, well, okay, sure. But if we really saw reality in a different way, if we really, it's not even saying saw reality in a different way, that's not quite strong enough. If our vision of reality is different, then reality is different too. That's why the other phrase isn't strong enough. It's really then a matter of living in and acting in a different reality. And I think that that is deeply important because you know one of the ongoing questions in studying and working with time, space, and knowledge, the vision, is that it can be hard, you know, it can be hard for people to see how to integrate it into their lives. But I suppose that way of saying it is too limiting. You know, we don't want to integrate time, space, and knowledge into our lives. We want to integrate our lives into a new vision of reality. So perhaps that distinction is helpful in some way. To me, it really suggests the importance of finding ways to re-experience or experience newly what's going on in our activity. So this 2 week break, like every other time, of course, is an opportunity to perhaps to go into that more. And it did strike me in going over the materials we have that I've actually written quite a bit. It's partly because I did that summary of the class that I forgot to record last time, but it's also because I did the introduction at the beginning. And so there's a lot of material to review, so you might want to review that and in any event find ways to use the next 2 weeks well, and we'll meet 2 weeks from today. And we won't meet next week. Kathleen, maybe you could just send out a reminder to people that we won't be meeting in the same way that you send out reminders that we will be meeting. I'm going to try one more time to change this camera just because I think it'd be interesting. Yeah, that's okay. So that's the other camera, which, well, you get to see my bookshelf. I would need to change it in some way. Let's see how to do this. I would need to change it in some way to get out of wide angle. We don't really need that. But yeah, maybe it's not worth it, huh? I'll just go back to the old one. Okay. A little bit of a head-on shot. So, let's talk about the beginning of the chapter. Let's start about the talk about the reading for this week and the fundamental approach for this week. If you ask the question, we're looking at this past, present, future structure, and in the notes, the orientation, I was using the abbreviation PPF structure just because it was easier to write. But we're looking at the past, present, future structure of every moment, and the point that I've made a number of times now, and that I hope you're exploring, is that that structure really is a structure. It's part of what's given in terms of our experience of this moment. So it ties back into the question of a vision of reality. In our ordinary vision of reality, time is whatever we can say about it, and maybe we don't understand it that well, but whatever we can say about it, it has to do with past, present, and future. And that's fine, but if we switch to this new vision of reality, then we say, well, no, it's just a structure. Experience appears with this past, present, future structure as part of it. Whenever we're having experience, it's in the present, seems like. And it reaches back to a past and it reaches forward to a future, and that's what we've been looking at. But that's just the structure of experience. It doesn't get us that much closer to the nature of time itself. So if you ask, what is the future of this moment, the answer, and I'm realizing that you could give a lot of different answers, but the answer that I want to focus on is that it all depends. It depends on our intentions. It depends on what I care about. It depends on what I'm engaged with. And what that means, and this begins to get a little closer to the notion of the what is the timing, the timeliness of time. In that sense, the future and the past are involved in this present moment, and my way of engaging the present moment is the gateway to the future and the past. So I talk about intention and concerns and so on. Now, that doesn't mean that time is completely caught up in the concerns of the self. In fact, that would be. If so, if that were the case, we'd be in trouble because we'd have no way to move beyond the concerns of the self. But the way to start, the way to begin to ask about the presence of the present, which is one of the terms that has come up in the reading, I think, in this week, the way to start is by looking in terms of concerns. And, I actually came across something when I was preparing for a class I was teaching at the Nyingma Institute last week, and it's a class in an ongoing course about Buddhism, and I didn't wind up using it in that class, but when I was preparing for this class, I thought, well, this is interesting. The two are connected. So I'm going to tell you a story from the Buddhist tradition. This is a story about a Buddhist master named Aryadeva, who was very famous for his penetrating insight and wisdom. And at one time, he held a debate, or he was actually invited to go to a Nalanda University because there was someone representing the Hindu tradition, more or less. And I'm going to call him Matrachitta. That was the name he took later after the debate, but it's easier. That name is easier. He was invited to debate Matrachitta, who was really good at debate, and he was defeating all of the Buddhist scholars, and that was creating a lot of difficulty. So they invited Aryadeva to come and debate him. And the description of the debate's very interesting, and part of it has to do with the arguments that were made, but there was a lot that was going on that was not at the level of arguments. But the part that I want to just talk about now is before they ever had the debate, they were sort of feeling each other out, you know, the way boxers will, and when they're starting a fight, they want to see how people react, you know. So Madhvachita asked Aryadeva a couple of questions. Aryadeva came into a room, and Madhvachita was standing at the threshold of a doorway into the room. He was standing right in the threshold, and he asked Aryadeva. He said, "Am I going in or am I leaving?" And Aryadeva answered, "That depends on your intention." And that frustrated Madhvachita because it was the right answer. you know, the he was trying to say he wanted an answer that said, "Well, how can I tell? I don't know." But Aryadeva said, "That depends on your intention." And then another time, they were in let's say, in a courtyard together, and there was a chicken running through the courtyard, and Madhvachita scooped up the chicken, and he held it out, and he said, "Am I going to kill this bird or not?" And Aryadeva said, "That depends on your compassion." And I think both those answers, I have no idea what the traditional interpretation of those two stories, which are pretty much the same, what the traditional interpretation is. But for our purposes, I think it goes right back to this point that I was making. The future unfolds not on the basis of a past, present, future structure in the sense that the past determines, you know, plays itself out in the present and then causes a future. The structure unfolds in terms of the way we're engaging the world. It depends on our intention, it depends on our compassion, it depends on our training, you could say, which has to do with the past and so on. It's not an objective structure. The past, or put it this way, when you're talking about a past, present, future structure, it's not, you haven't exhausted the field if you point to the objective unfolding of moments from past to present to future. So that's why I've been emphasizing this practice of looking at the past, present, future structure, the practice that is taken from the first TSK book, and looking at it because if time has to do with our intention and our concerns, then those are available in a very different way from what we usually imagine right here in the present. So we want to look at the past, present, future of each moment, and I actually want us to do a little practice now. And the point to make, let me introduce the practice. The point to make is that in every moment, you could say, there's a past, present, future structure. That's what the exercise suggests. But we need to be a little bit careful about what counts as a moment. You know, there is a tendency to say a moment is this point instant, and it's related to what Rinpoche says, where he says, well, the present seems to be just this dividing line between the past and the future. It's not, it doesn't have, you know, it's infinitely thin. On one side there's the past, on the other side there's the future, and he has some things to say about how those two aren't equal to each other. But in between, there's this little bar that keeps sliding along, which is the present, and it takes up no past and it takes up no future. It's just what separates the two. And that is fine, but it doesn't seem to correspond all that well to our sense of what it means to be present or to our sense of presence. So it may be that when you're looking at the past, present, future of each moment, the momentariness of the moment is not just you know, this instant of time, so you have to say, oh, too late, now to the next moment, now to the next moment, now to the next moment, now to the next moment. It may be that a moment of time is something that, if you looked at it tried to look at it from the outside objectively, maybe you'd say, well, it endures longer than, a hundredth of a second or a tenth of a second or a second. A moment is shaped by our intention. So if you look back at the story of Aryadeva, and Makrachita says, am I leaving the room or am I entering the room? He's saying, in effect, he's asking what's going on in the present. And Aryadeva answers, that depends on your intention, right? And your intention is not something that exists in that very moment necessarily. Okay, the specific example I want to do, and this is a little bit of an experiment here because I'm going to bring in yet another technical thing. I want to play some music. And when you listen to the music, ask yourself about the past, present, and future structure as of the experience of listening to the music. But don't necessarily expect, maybe you will, but don't necessarily expect that as you listen, the present moment is going to be just, just now when the trumpet is sounding or something like that. So let's try that for a couple of minutes. I have a radio station online here, so I will try to start it, and there's always possibilities of technical glitches. But when I start it, it'll be in the middle of a piece of music because it's just a radio station. So just listen with a sense of past, present, future of the moment, and also asking the question, what counts as a moment? So here we go. We hope. Give it a moment. Okay, I stopped that. Sorry if you were enjoying it and I cut it off. But I don't know how well you could hear that. As I said, this was an experiment. But I would be interested in what conclusions or what you noticed, that's a better way to say it, what you noticed about momentariness in terms of listening to this music. And anything you may have noticed about past, present, and future, about that structure. So you're free, of course, to write in the chat box, and that's what people seem to generally like. But would anybody like to say something in real time here?
I'll say something.
Sure, Beverly.
Yes. It seemed as though that the present had to do more with the, I'll say act, but maybe that's not the right word, the hearing of it, that I was listening to the music. I could have listened instead to, the hum of the refrigerator or something else, but what was present. And even in that, it was almost as though it was a meditation, because at times my mind would start to wander to thoughts that had nothing to do with the music, and then I would redirect the attention to the hearing of the music. And
Right.
that was about as close as I could get to a presentness
Right.
feeling.
Okay. So well, that makes very good sense. You know, the act of hearing, I mean, that's what I asked you to direct your intention toward, and so you were looking at that. Beyond that, I suppose the reason I chose music, and it's a you know, when people are looking at time, they often look at music, and the reason is because I think because music has a temporal structure of its own, right? So when you are listening to a particular passage in a melody, it only makes sense in terms of what has come before and probably in terms of what you're anticipating coming next. So any sense of that? Anybody, Beverly, was that something you
Well,
looked at? Yeah.
yeah, actually, this last week on another of my long road trips, was listening to a favorite concerto that I've listened to for most of my life, and listening to that always brings great emotion and tears, and yet, but I have this, I know the music so well, and if it would have been a different, something I didn't know so well, I wouldn't have had such a reaction. So I'm just reflecting right now. I don't know what the answer is, but just the difference in listening to that piece of music, which seems to pull at much finer levels than listening to what we just listened to, that I couldn't name what it was.
Right. Okay, well, that's interesting. It goes back to the notion that, part of what's striking me, I suppose, in general, about this whole inquiry into time and this whole notion of a new vision of reality is that our experience has this tremendous fullness to it, a tremendous richness. So I think in the course last year, one of the terms we came back to a lot was the multidimensionality of experience. So you're talking about a dimension of meaning that came into the experience for you of listening to this piece that you knew so well, that wasn't there when you were listening to what we have right now,
Right,
and yeah,
right.
and so that has to do with shaping the present that we're in. Okay, let me go ahead and look. Let me go ahead and look at some of the comments people have made in the chat box here. So David says, music as theme could be a moment as it played out. As structured on sheet music, it might be structured in 32nd notes and bars in sound to focus on rhythm. I think that that's similar to the point that Caroline makes in the next comment in the chat box. It was hard to isolate a specific moment of listening. The flow of past, present, and future seemed to blend one into another. So that has to do with, I mean, I think that's what David is saying when he says, as a theme, the theme itself could be a moment as it plays out. That's kind of my sense too, and maybe that has something to do with what music tries to do. Of course, there's so many kinds of music, and they try to do different things, but it's an invitation to enter into a present that is more rich and more full, to go back to Beverly's point, and also doesn't have the same duration as what we're used to thinking of when we think of our ordinary objective time, right? In ordinary time, we like to imagine that we know what counts as a moment. Maybe in music, what counts as a moment is completely different. Music sweeps us up into a different time, a different way of timing. So Brigitte says, at some point I felt by the moment I recognized what I heard, this recognition part, usually called the present, seemed to be past. Okay, well, that's a very interesting point. And that applies in a more general way. If we really say, okay, what is this past, present, future structure anyway? And we set out to investigate it in our experience. it's really, really slippery. Because by the time you recognize, in the present, by the time you recognize in the present something that has just been going on, that recognition is also gone too. There's, kind of a recognition of the recognition. And all these, this whole notion of one tiny little point succeeding another tiny little point starts to break down. Let's see what Bruce says here. Okay. I found my sense of size of the present was flexible. So this relates to what we've been talking about the last few minutes here. Shifting with what was happening in the music. Okay, so this is a more precise report here, or experience perhaps. As the pace of music changed, my present contracted or expanded. Sudden breaks in the music were like immediate momentary punctuation marks. But there also seemed to be a limit to how far my sense of the present of the music could be expanded. Yeah. Okay, so people have speculated endlessly about why it is that music has this tremendous power, and there are some people who say that music or singing preceded language in terms of human evolution, because it just engages us in this remarkable way. And that may have a lot to do with time. It may have a lot to do with the different way that music engages time. And I think that's what you're saying. Let's see. Okay, one more, and then I'll make another point. And feel free to continue, and feel free to comment on other people's remarks, please. So Michael says, "I could hardly hear it." Okay, my apologies. I was realizing I could have made it louder, but I next time if we do this again, I will. I noticed that my mind did its best to fill in the gaps. Since I'm not a composer, I filled in the gaps with a fantasy. Would aliens hearing the tatters of sound, it's a nice word, the tatters of sound, recognize it as music? Okay. Well, it's an interesting fantasy. I mean, it's more a kind of speculation, isn't it? There were in the 19th century, especially, I think there was a way of working with music where people would try to let their imagination run wild, like that. I mean, I don't know too much about this, but there's that, I guess, that the piece of music by Debussy called Afternoon of a Faun. And, you're invited to imagine this young faun in a meadow somewhere, and then certain things happen. And, tone poems are like that. So that's one way of filling in music with imagination. Your suggestion is different. It's a way of thinking about sorry, I meant something else. How would other people respond to it? So that's in a way going off into a different realm even. And again, I apologize. I could have made I, next time I'll make the music louder. Okay. Kathleen is wondering if everybody can hear me. Is that a problem? Anybody want to speak up?
Yes, I find you going in and out.
I'm going in and out. That's too bad.
On the phone.
Yeah. Well, I can try to speak up a little bit and see if that helps. But I assure you that in real time, in my world, I'm not going in and out, however you try to do that. The sound in general is very bad. Oh, I'm so sorry. Now the truth comes out. Okay. Okay. He was cutting out there a lot, and then Bruce says Jack's narrative suddenly turned into a robotic melody, which Beverly appreciates. Well, that's too bad. David says the sound was lost, but it's back. And Beverly says, yes, now it's back. Okay, so we had a technical issue there. It's kind of funny that the technical issue relates to what we were just doing. You know, relates to the question of how we engage sound and how our experience of time goes with it. Okay, so Caroline makes a comment here that is going back into the content, as it were, this whole question of, you know, how flexible is time? Because Bruce raised the question at the end. He said, okay, my sense of time expanded or condensed with the pace of the music, but there was a limit. I couldn't go, you know, I couldn't expand to take in the whole thing. And Caroline says, I've had a similar experience to Bruce regarding time's flexibility in response to a number of situations. This seems to depend upon whether I like or dislike what is occurring. It reminds me of that old saying, time flies when you're having fun. I'd be interested in finding ways of investigating this more deeply. Well, yes, you know, it is one of the experiences we have of time, that it's variable. Now, usually people say, well, that's subjective time, and it's the opposite of objective time. And that gets you, that doesn't tell you too much, but maybe a little bit. But I think actually this fundamental practice that we're doing of looking at the past, present, and future of each moment gives us a way to investigate that more deeply. Because we're looking at we're looking, there I did fade out a little bit, I'll come back in. we're looking at the way that our concerns, our interests, our sense of what's happening, all of that feeds into the present. And it may be, and I don't know about this, it may be that as the present becomes more rich, its relationship to what we would, you know, what you could call clock time or objective time changes. The thing about objective time is that it seems to me that, you know, objective time is very handy. We've talked about this before. You know, we all showed up here at 9 o'clock my time or whatever time it is where you are. We all showed up here at the same time, and that's because we have these great things called clocks and calendars and computers and that guarantee that we can share a particular time. And just as an aside, you know, that's a fairly recent development. I mean, a century ago, people in different parts of the world didn't have a standardized form of time. It was about 100 years ago, a little more, I think, when we really standardized time across different time zones and the whole idea of time zones came into effect. But even before that, people certainly relied on time, on clocks, to get this objective sense of time. And so it's this very valuable tool. But it seems to me that it's kind of a bargain that we make with ourselves. We say this tool of standardized time is really useful, so I'm going to follow it. But what we do in order to do that is we make the choice to give up our sense of time as being flexible and expandable and condensable. We say, well, all of that's just subjective, and that doesn't have anything to do with objective time. And then after a while, we start to think that objective time is, that's the real one. As long as we're relying on clocks, you know, that's and all the other variations on clocks, that's, we have to do that. We have to pretend, I think it's fair to say, we have to pretend that time can be sliced up in these units that are so, you know, fungible, that where each unit equals every other unit. It doesn't work that way in our ordinary experience. And there is a place where Rinpoche talks about that in the reading for today. At the bottom of page 80, it's this question, which last time I said, you know, we hadn't really looked very carefully yet at the difference between subjective and objective. I'm trying to remedy that a little right now, and it comes up in the reading. He's talking about on page at the bottom of page 80. Let's see. He says, you know, so there's an objection to looking at time, let's say in the way we've been looking at it. The obvious objection is that our interests and concerns are subjective, whereas time is objective. And then he says, let me keep reading. He said, viewed objectively, the past is the whole of what has happened up until this very moment. Though we are free to select out shifting assemblies of determining factors as the history of this moment, this historical approach does not affect the reality of time at all, any more than my present experience defines the totality of what is happening right now. So time is objective if we break it up into these moments and we say, okay, everything since the beginning of the universe, that's the past. So that's the objective version. And he makes the point that that's like space in the sense of my saying, well, here's my experience right now, but I have no idea what's happening where you are, except that I'm making the assumption that you're listening to what I'm saying. But for instance, I had no idea that you were having trouble hearing me, that the sound was cutting in and out, right? So my experience of the past is my selection out of the range of possibilities that objective time gives me. My experience of the present is my selection based, I suppose, largely on my own sensory abilities or capacities. But none of that is, you know, objective time is, it really has almost nothing to do with that. And then he goes on to say, and so I'm just going to invite you because we're pretty much out of time, he goes on to say that sharp division between subjective and objective time is a little problematic, and we could explore it differently. And the way that he ends up exploring it is to say this notion that the past is the totality of everything that's happened since the beginning of the universe, that's a conceptual model. You know, it doesn't have much to do with our experience. I mean, obviously, we haven't experienced the past since the beginning of the universe. And then he makes the point at the end of the section and at the end of the reading we had for today. He said, yeah, we can think about that logically, the whole of time. But he said, the present as we experience it takes form quite differently, not as a constructed totality, but as a concrete circumstance with its own defining lineage or lineages. And we haven't talked today about lineage. I pointed toward that term in the orientation material, but I think it's a good way to look at. I'm sorry, I was distracted by the chat notes here. The notion of lineage, a good example of that, let's just put it that way, is the story I told about Matrachita, right? He picks up this bird and he says, am I going to kill this bird or not? And Arya Deva says, well, that depends on the nature of your compassion. You know, what's the lineage of events in your mind? Are you a compassionate person? Or are you, whatever the opposite is, an unfeeling person, let's say? That will determine what the future is going to be. It's the lineage of the past, not the past as a whole. And every present moment has its own lineage, which then leads it into its own future. And that's a good way to think about or explore time. It's something. It's a pretty good place to stop. I see there are a couple of more comments. One of them has to do with sound distortion. And I can also try a different microphone. Maybe I'll do that. We'll see how much of a problem. I'll get some feedback from Kathleen or anybody who wants to give it to me about how much of a problem Was it just, you know, for a few minutes there in the middle, or are we still having trouble? I'm not going to ask you to tell me now because we need to stop. And then Bruce makes one more comment about the music experience. He says, one interesting thing was that the already past music coalesced as a kind of lost present that was perhaps even larger than it was in the moment, since it contained all that had gone before as a kind of unit. Okay, so this is a great example of lineage too. In fact, I think a musical piece is exactly about creating a lineage, isn't it? Because, you know, you start off, maybe you state a theme, and then you repeat the theme, and then there are variations on the theme. And this is true for popular music too. And what it means is that when you get to a certain point in the musical piece, everything that's gone before, at least, you know, you probably haven't picked up everything at all, but everything that's gone before is shaping and conditioning. It's the lineage of the present moment. So that's the kind of thing we want to be exploring. It's a variation on the theme, to use those musical terms, of looking at the past, present, and future of each moment, asking yourself to what extent is that a question of lineage? Okay, I think I will stop there. We've gone on a little long, so my apologies. I will post the recording for today, and maybe, well, my recording will turn out just fine because I'm recording what's happening in my room here. But I assume Kathleen's been recording also. Maybe we can get a little better handle on whether there's something we need to do about the sound quality in the future. So we have a little while to think about that. Enjoy your time these next 2 weeks, and we'll have session 4 2 weeks from today.